Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour on this Monday, the 22nd day of October 2012. I'm Jeff Seifert for Raven News. Setka Mountain Rescue volunteers will gather this morning to resume the search for Lael Grant. The 33-year-old Setka woman was last seen October 14th. According to Alaska State Troopers, Grant's vehicle was found Saturday at the end of the Nelson Logging Road near the shooting range. Mountain Rescue has already conducted searches using ground teams and search dogs. Anyone with information is asked to call Sitka Police immediately at 747-3245. A photo of Grant is available on our website, kcaw.org. Again, to recap, authorities are continuing the search for 33-year-old Lael Grant, reported missing by her family. Anyone with information should call the Sitka Police Department at 747-3245. Jury selection is set to begin today in the trial of John Marvin, Jr., the man accused of killing two Hoonah police officers in 2010. Superior Court Judge David George ruled Friday that Marvin is competent to stand trial. The ruling came after hearing two psychologists give their opinion of Marvin. They both visited him at the Alaska Psychiatric Institute in Anchorage on Wednesday. That was just days after Marvin's defense attorney asked for another mental evaluation because he said he had difficulty communicating with his client. Marvin faces murder and weapons misconduct charges in connection with the deaths of Hoonah police officers Matt Tokoota, that is, and Tony Wallace on August 2010. Both psychologists found that the 47-year-old Marvin understood the court proceedings, but he was simply being evasive or in denial. They testified on Friday afternoon that Marvin's refusal to talk about the important facts in the case may be his only way to control the situation. Opening arguments in the case are set for Wednesday in Juneau Superior Court. The trial could last as long as 2 weeks. Sea Alaska Southeast's Regional Native Corporation is testing wood power generators at a Hoonah mill. If they work, they could be used to reduce energy costs in other small southeast cities. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Wes and Sue Tyler run Icy Straits Lumber and Milling in Hoonah, about 40 miles west of Juneau. They make log cabin kits, siding, beams, and other finished products out of southeast Alaska wood. But high energy prices have increased operating costs. A particular problem is equipment used to dry damp wood. So Wes watched closely as a new system using wood chips to generate electricity was turned on earlier this month.
All of a sudden the engine comes to life and we're able to go in and turn on all the lights in the building and a fan that was actually pushing some warm air around in the dry kiln, and with a few more KWs involved, well, you could ultimately have the dry kiln running on that sort of fuel.
The system is called wood gasification. It's part of an experiment to see if compact devices, this one is 4x4x8 feet high, are a viable alternative to oil-powered systems. So far, the gasifier at the Tylers has been working fine. Sea Alaska Executive Vice President Rick Harris, speaking at a press briefing in Juneau, says it's the right place to try it out.
He's already got the wood supply there. He has the technical know-how to deal with these kinds of things. But based upon his experience, then we can see if we can transfer this kind of technology to other areas.
In fact, a second unit is also being tested at the mill for eventual use at a Hoonah tourist attraction. Wood gasification is not new technology. It's been around in one form or another since the late 1800s. Small gasifiers were even used to power cars, trucks, and trains in German-occupied territory during World War II fuel shortages. How they work is not that complicated.
So what we do in a gasifier is burn part of the wood, generate heat, which converts the solid to a gas.
Consultant Tom Miles of Portland worked with Sea Alaska's Ha'ani subsidiary and Icy Straits Lumber to select and install this particular system.
And then the mixture of that gas with the charcoal solids further reduces the fuel to a fuel gas. And the fuel gas is about half nitrogen and about 20% carbon monoxide, about 20% hydrogen. And that will burn in an internal combustion engine.
It's not as efficient as gasoline or propane, but if wood scraps or leftovers from milling or thinning trees are easily available, it can be cheaper. Miles says it can take about a third off the cost of diesel power generation.
We will be not only generating electricity, but we can capture the waste heat from the engine. So it's a micro-scale combined heat and power.
See Alaska's Harris as a Hoonah Lodge owner has already shown interest in the system. And the corporation is working with the Icy Strait Point tourist attraction, which is owned by Hoonah's Village Native Corporation, to use gasification to power and heat a cultural center and eventually a greenhouse.
It's one of those things that during the summer they have a lot of visitors come in, and so if we can grow in the greenhouse, you know, certain plants or vegetables that they can use, and then when they're not using it, then we move that stuff into like the Juneau market or the local market.
Sea Alaska and its consultant have looked at a lot of gasification options. Harris says the Hoonah experiments will show whether they chose the right technology.
In a month, Wes may tell us this just isn't going to work. I think that we're fairly optimistic that it will work, but that's why we're doing it in a place where we have the ability to make the necessary adjustments and to prove it can work in a rural community environment.
Sea Alaska's energy experiments have been funded in part by the Federal Department of Energy. The corporation is already heating its Juneau headquarters with a wood pellet boiler, which is cheaper than diesel heat. It also considered building a waste wood ethanol plant at Ketchikan's Ward Cove, but concluded it wasn't economically feasible. This is Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
And you can learn more about how gasification works by checking out our links on our website, kcaw.org. You may recall stories last week about two Alaska walrus pups going to new homes in big city zoos. The pudgy cute faces of Puttock and Mittock were seen nationwide as the youngsters made their way to Indianapolis and New York City zoos. Reports indicate they were rescued from the ocean off Alaska, but that's a pretty big place. KTOO has narrowed it down with the help of a former Juneau resident who lives in Barrow and visited with one of the walrus pups. Here's Rosemarie Alexander with the rest of the story.
Barrow veterinarian Sarah Coburn is also accompanist for the Presbyterian Church Choir. On Sunday, July 22nd, she told the story of a young walrus being found hanging around a fisherman's net near town. The little guy was at the vet clinic.
So Kathy and I jumped in the car and ran over. They were basically packing him up, getting ready to stick him on one of the air cargo planes to send him down to Seward.
That's former Juneau resident Peter Andreg. He and his wife, Kathy, have lived in Barrow for 3 years now. When the stories of the two walrus pups hit the news last week, Andreg sent me a picture.
All of a sudden, man, it's just like hit the news, and I'm seeing it everywhere.
And all these articles just kept saying, rescued from the ocean of Alaska.
I know. I thought, come on, that's why I emailed you. I thought, well, you know, you should get some credit here.
Puttock was one of three walruses to be rescued from Barrow area beaches over a two-week period in late June and early July. Dr. Robert Sudam is a wildlife biologist for the North Slope Borough.
3 or 4 days, 5 days before the pups were found, there was a group of at least 1,000 walruses that drifted by on some ice, you know, less than a mile offshore on the Chukchi seaside. And so it seems very likely that somehow the pups got separated from their mom.
One walrus pup was quite sick and died within a week, despite intensive veterinary care at Alaska Sea Life Center in Seward. Sudam rescued the first pup, who was given an Inupiaq Eskimo name.
Puttock means to get into things, to mess around with things. And since he was there hanging around the fishnet, and in fact the first time the fisherman saw him, the walrus pup was pulling on the net. So he was puttocking with the net.
He says the pup was in pretty good condition, but getting more lethargic by the day. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has management responsibility for stranded marine mammals. That's where biologist Joel Garlick Miller entered the picture.
The calves are very dependent on their mother for a period of 2 years, so they can't really survive on their own if they're abandoned during that critical time. So if we hear of reports of an orphan animal, we try to assess the situation, give them an opportunity to rejoin a herd if possible. And if that doesn't seem likely after a period of about 48 hours, then we consider capturing the animal for rehabilitation.
That was the case for both Puttock and Mittock. Dr. Sudam captured Puttock with a large round hoop net that he uses for beluga whales when attaching satellite trackers.
So I basically snuck up on one side of him, My wife, Leslie Pierce, was on the other side of him, distracting him, and I walked right up to him and put this hoop net over him, and then we picked him up with a lot of effort and wrestled him into the back of the SUV.
Sudam says he initially thought the walrus pup was about 70 pounds, but he turned out to be 250. Patek stayed in the SUV. That's where the Andrag saw him.
What was really amusing is one of the stories I saw in the media talked about how they were so cuddly, and it seems a little funny because they're, what, a couple hundred pounds of cuddly. But sure enough, the one that we saw, one of Sarah's assistants, was in the cage with this walrus, and that walrus just looked as comfortable as could be, all curled up with her, and she had a bottle and was feeding him, and he didn't look stressed at all.
Patek and Mittig spent the rest of the summer at the Sea Life Center until the right homes could be found at aquariums that already have walrus. U.S. Fish and Wildlife's Garlic Miller saw them both as they headed out of Alaska, Patek to Indianapolis Zoo and Mittig to the New York Aquarium in Brooklyn. He says they'll serve as good ambassadors for Alaska's wildlife and educate zoo visitors about the growing problem of the loss of summer sea ice in the Arctic.
Walrus in Alaska used to spend all their summer months out in floating sea ice habitats, but in recent years the sea ice has moved beyond the shallow continental shelf waters where walrus feed, and so they've been forced ashore along the coast.
There's now a proliferation of walrus haulouts on the Arctic coast with thousands of animals at a time. And now you know the rest of the story of Patek and Mittig. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
And if you want to hear that story again, any of the stories we've had on this morning, or find out any other information essential to living in our town, go to kcaw.org. Sunny skies with highs around 41 degrees, the weather forecast for today. You're listening to KCAW Sitka. It is 1 minute past the hour. Good morning.